Welcome back to Biff, a podcast about superhero TV shows, movies, and assassinations of assassins. Dan Morin is away this week. My name is John Moltz, and answering the call for additional members of the Biff initiative this week, we have our regularly scheduled host, Guy English.
I feel bad now that we sent Dan away because I forgot that he did all the editing and hosting.
He does all the work,
which was very short-sighted of me.
And now the monkeys are left to try and juggle the balls.
Speaking of juggling balls, hey, James.
James Dobson is also here.
Let's see if we can get an episode of Biff that I'm on actually released to the public.
Oh,
this time.
Damn. And I just promised I would edit this one, too.
He had that saved up.
Do you know what? We can talk about that. We can spend a little bit of time up front talking about that. James and I, we recorded at least two, right? About the boys and something else.
Yeah, I was on the boys. We've talked about Preacher. Right?
And then didn't you guys record one, just the two of you?
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. I think we only did one, but
okay.
I mean, I've probably maybe it was like, just repressed one. The memory.
It's also
well, fun. Here's the thing. I really enjoyed that discussion. I'm not a big fan of the boys. And here's the thing. That episode of the boys dealt with a sexual assault, or the show in general did. And as I listened back to it and tried to put it together, I'm like, this is my friends talking and chatting, and like it was not like we were out of character in any way, but it didn't feel like a Biff episode, if that makes sense.
It was too much.
It was too, it's like sexual assault and like pretty heavy stuff, and like it's a dark show, and we were kind of negative. Not that I'm entirely negative on the show, James, because I know you enjoy it, and it's not bad, but it's not necessarily my cup of tea. Anyway, I listened back to it and I felt like I'd let you down and wasted your time, and then it's been a running joke between everybody that I just watched that episode.
Well, see, now he's got that material to work with.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's worth something to be able to hold something over your head.
Yeah. Yeah.
Honestly, just being able to chat to you for, you know, an hour is a pleasure.
I really enjoy that. I think the combination of you, like, being out of the typical three of us, and talking about a show that is much darker than usual, made it something that I'm like, it was funny, but it was dark funny. Like, I don't know. It didn't.
Yeah. No, I mean, I get that as well.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like the three of us were talking like only 2 days ago.
Yes. Yeah.
And so we're kind of, I think, in the groove for this one.
But yeah, we're good. It's nothing. Okay, whatever. Who cares? Moving past that. It was. Right. It was.
I mean, we did 20 minutes on the Spider-Man trailer a few days ago.
It was great.
For completely the wrong podcast.
Yeah, go listen to.
Pretty much.
No, it's fine. That was the bonus episode. We can talk about whatever we want to.
Yeah, go listen to Rebound, everybody, and sign up for Rebound Prime.
That's right. And then you'll get, to hear us blather on about the Spider-Man trailer for longer than you probably
sometimes when James and I are on. Normally a regular host just tries to pitch you on Amazon, but besides that, it's a pretty good show.
Okay, we should move along because we have three, not one, not two, but three episodes of TV to cover. We are covering Legends of Tomorrow and Stargirl and What If. And to get things kicked off, we're going to talk about Legends of Tomorrow, season 6, episode 14?
13, yes. I think.
Is it 13?
I think it's 13. 13.
You're correct. It is 13.
See, I am here to rein you in.
And it's the Silence of the Sonograms. That's right. And to bring us up to speed on that episode, Guy English.
Real super duper flash style update here. In this episode, we have Constantine struggle with his addiction to magic, inevitably succumbing to it near the end. He and Zari have a touching, like, it gets real train spotty. Like, it's actually a pretty effective part of the show. Meanwhile, in Goofy Town, Mick is giving birth to 48 eggs out of his nose. So that's fun. Bishop has been, like, teleports in. They capture him and proceeds to spend.
Well, he's printed. He's 3D printed, right?
Teleported. Yeah. Well,
yeah.
I mean,
what's the difference between 3D printing and teleporting when we get down to it?
Yeah, one of them has a diskette in it. Like, one of them's buffered, so you can rematerialize when you want, and the other one's just instantaneous, I guess. That seems to be the only difference. Anyway, he gets 3D printed, and 6% of him is Sarah, so he... I don't know how this works, but somehow 6% is good enough to fool the computer, and somehow it's the 6% that...
It doesn't make any sense.
It's the 6%.
It is quintessential Legends of Tomorrow.
Somehow she's genetically capable of fighting in exactly the same... Who cares?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
That 6% covers wedding planning as well.
And knowing what the passwords are, which, you know, anyway.
Yeah.
It's Legends of Tomorrow.
Not a genetically credible scientific position. Genes. Yeah. Which should have been a dead giveaway from the guy giving birth to 48 giant eggs out of his face.
That part I believe more.
I don't know why. Yeah. Anyway. Bishop basically spends the episode playing mind games with Ava and Sarah, and eventually sort of breaks in to help Mick give birth and steals his comm device in order to contact Constantine so that he can manipulate Constantine to his will, which we don't know yet. Still mysterious. Broadly, I think that covers it. There's a bunch of jokes and stuff. I think that gets the point across. What do you think, James?
I'm not enjoying the Constantine arc, because it feels to me... I mean, yeah, he sells it well as an actor, but it's... I don't know. It reminds me of the sort of the Dark Willow stuff in Buffy, which I looked up and is 19 years ago.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I was just watching it and I was saying, just die already. So you could be whatever the next character that you're supposed to play is.
Well, that's part of the problem, right? We know that he's going to be something else.
Well, we know that the actor is coming back to play another character.
Yeah.
An actually Welsh character, because the actor is Welsh. And so that kind of like, I like my legends to be 100% goofy, and that whole storyline is just kind of, because you can see that he's gonna just eventually succumb to it and possibly sacrifice himself to save them all in the last episode or something to have some redemption.
Yeah, it does seem like it's gone on a little long, maybe.
Yeah, just die. Yeah.
although I mean, when we've talked about this before, but we didn't like the Spain episode very much, and the last two I think have been written better and giving him a lot more to do as an actor, and I think he's done a lot with it, and I think I liked the previous episode a little bit better, but this one was also good. There were a lot of really good moments in it. But the thing that I didn't like about this episode was just the constant sort of switcheroos, both between with Constantine and also with Bishop. Like good, bad, good, bad, good, bad. And then, you know, we end up where we end up at the end. It seems like it was a lot of like watching ping pong.
It resets to one, right? Bishop is a bad guy. He's on the ship, and Constantine is crazy and like self-interested, basically. So,
Yeah, I mean, it got the impression that Constantine had been taken over by evil Constantine.
The end. That's totally the read I had. Yeah.
So in a way, he's worse than he was.
I guess, yeah. He's,
yeah, yeah. I mean, it's like our Constantine might be gone at this point. Or
I did like the work that Zari was doing, or the actress.
Yeah.
I thought that was good, her reacting. And she's goofy, Zari, but I kind of like that when the rubber meets the road, her bow is clearly in bad shape. Mm-hmm. She's tough, and she hews a lot closer to the other Zari, who I forget what grew up in a post-apocalyptic hell world. I forget what it was like.
Yep.
Like they're
right. Her brother died.
Right, that was it.
It's the world that's taken over by what's the organization?
Argus?
That Diggle works for Argus, right?
Yeah.
But an evil version of Argus, basically.
I did like that when she was confronted with something truly awful, like her love succumbing to addiction, her character was not the same, and yet definitely was reminiscent of sort of the more grounded version of Sarli that we've got. And I appreciated that. And that's she's doing a lot of work. That's hard to make one character look like the version of it. Like, she plays two different people who are very different, and in this case, she needs to play one, the goofy, quote-unquote goofy character, cue them more towards serious yeah. and still make them, differentiate them a little bit.
Yeah.
I think the thing that gets me is, like, if we take this storyline probably to the conclusion, I assume, of Constantine sacrificing himself or something like that, how's that going to leave Goofy Zari for, like, season 7? And I just think, like, they're going to have to get rid of her as well and bring back original Zari or something, because otherwise it's just going to be...
Yeah.
I want goofiness. I don't want, like...
Well, I like both. Like, grief. Mean, I like, you know, I like...
Don't try and turn Legends into Arrow.
Serious character development stuff. And, you know, the previous seasons where John was dealing with his boyfriend who was taken to hell, right?
Yeah, I think so.
I liked that storyline better, I guess. And that was fairly serious. But... I don't know. I mean, you like to root for the characters and you like to, you know, I mean, these are our heroes, and he's not, you know, I mean, I get the whole thing, but he's not being a hero right now. He's being kind of a...
I did like the birth sequence, because it reminded me of Total Recall, but like 45 times Total Recall.
Right.
And I thought it was a reasonably effective, presumably CG head or whatever that they were just distorting and firing these things out of.
Guess what, that was definitely CG. There's no way
they didn't actually put those up as
no, it's like a bubble.
It was more a question of like, did they create a 3D model of his head, or were they just distorting?
Yes, his head doesn't move much when the bubble is going down, so I don't know, this is super tangential, but if the head's not moving, you can do like a bubble effect in effectively 2D space, right, rather than needing to map it.
You're just using Photoshop instead of
pretty much. Yeah,
right. Yeah.
But it was effective anyway.
Yeah, I liked it. How did you guys like Bishop?
I don't know. I like the concept of Bishop. I didn't like it in this because there was all the flip-flopping whether he was good or bad.
I kind of like him. I don't think he's the best villain, but I like him that he's sort of jokey and smarmy, and I almost like the singing. I'm not sure
he fits it fits Legends as a baddie, I think, more than most of them. But I don't know, I've been a bit down on this season of Legends, just the storyline seemed a bit all over the place.
Yeah,
and I don't think it's as good as
the previous season. No,
I don't know if that's like pandemic.
I think some of it probably is. I'm still enjoying it, but I don't think it's quite as good.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah. But I always look forward to watching it. So I liked the wirework fight scene in the hall with Sarah fighting Bishop, who just is taskmastering all her moves.
It's just all mirrored.
I didn't think about that comparison, but that's
At one point, I think she does the hair flip, but I couldn't tell if it was intentional or not. Like the fighting, whatever, Natasha's fighting pose thing.
Yeah, well, she does that landing a lot.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah.
I mean, they both have.
Yeah, I mean, I know they make fun of Natasha for that, but that's pretty standard superhero stuff, you know?
Exactly. Yeah.
I guess let's rate it. Anybody else want to like any funny jokes on it? Like the 48 eggs is kind of funny. I don't really think that he needed to go that far to get a comm device out of somebody's ear. Like
that seems
if you can 3D print a sentient clone, can't you just make a comm device?
You know what? He picked up a gun and he blasted Sarah. I'm like, whoa, you can't do that. And then I forgot that she's basically Wolverine at this point. I'm like, that's right, totally. Took that down a notch. I thought that was something dramatic. I'm like, it didn't matter. So
we didn't mention the sort of Spooner. I mean, they paid off. I wouldn't say paid off necessarily, but they came back to the thing where he had wiped her memory.
Yes. But and yet, see, here's the thing. They used her to be somebody to violate. Not that I want to get back into our boys talk, but like he messes with her head. That's not good. And then they basically just use her again to be like, oh my god, I can't believe he did that, and then it's all about him again, rather than her, like the victim. She's like, I got a gun, and I get victimized every now and then. It's like, that's, you're not doing a great job of that character. And I'd like to like her, right. I just have nothing to hang my hat on. There's very little there.
Yeah, so. I don't think there's too, yeah.
Yeah. I liked Ava's acting was good. Jess McCallan, I think.
Yeah.
I thought she believably went in sort of coy and knowing the game, like the lit.
Did they even mention where Rod was in this episode?
No, they did not.
I think that there was there might have been a throwaway line that he was off visiting the parents or
something. Oh, yeah, didn't he? Because he said in the previous episode he was going to go visit the mother.
That's Nate shows up just to, honestly, he may as well be like an intercom. He just comes in and tells people, hey, go over here, and then they go over there. Like, that's all he does. Yeah. I guess let's just...
I'm okay with that, too.
You know, yeah, like, there's a lot of people going on. That,
every once in a while, someone's not going to get, you know, something much to do in an episode, and that's okay.
Yeah, I in fact, like it. So let's just do the rating system. James, I presume you are familiar with the rating system?
Just to remind me, in case I hadn't listened to the last episode.
I think he just wants to hear you say
it. Why don't you say it, James? You're the guest here.
You may not know.
No, you too. I might not be bluffing. You know, who knows?
Biff is good. John Jr. is middling. And James is the worst. That's the rating system.
That's the new rating system.
Yeah, we've recalibrated a few things here in Dan's absence.
Well, you see, now I'm like torn as to, because A, I don't believe you, but B,
Alex is the worst,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to, I'm going to go John Jr. on this because it had its moments. Yeah. And I'm going to hold my Alex for, I think, the next thing that I talk about.
All right, then.
John.
Wow, that's an interesting preview.
Yeah. Yeah. Captain Negativity
James
over here.
I think James is harsher than
we are. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. John?
I think I'll go with the John Jr. as well. Wow. I was going to go Biff. I was going to go Biff. But...
I talked you down.
I think you did talk me down. I think the stuff about Constantine, I think it's gone on a little too long. And then I sort of realized what I don't like about it is just the fact that it's so much of a season devoted to our hero being horrible, being not a hero. And I tune into these shows for certain things. I'm a simple person. And I don't feel like it's quite delivering what I would like. So anyway, it's not bad either. Like James said, there are definitely things that I enjoyed about it. It did go back and forth too many times and then didn't really move the needle that much at the end.
So for me, here's the thing. I would have gone with a Biff, except we got Mr.
Except it sounds stupid when after James,
Mr. Blanket in the Rain here. What the hell?
I just love how I can...
You make everybody sad. Yeah.
Bishop style manipulate the two of you.
Here's the thing. It would have been on the cusp of a Biff. There are parts about it that I find biffy. I like Matt Ryan's performance. I sort of like... I like Zari's performance, for sure. Right. I like elements of Bishop and Ava's performance. In terms of that, like those two sort of weird little bottle-ish aspects to the episode, I like. I suppose there's another one. Nate's playing chess with Sarah, which is, I thought would be more of a conceit when they brought up chess, and then they just stopped playing chess, and it's got nothing to do with the episode anymore. Which is as life goes, I guess. But ultimately, like, I think you're right about, I've had enough of John. I like him. I like the performance, but it's like, you know,
I,
what?
I
like,
think it just
a superhero. I don't need that in this show, and. Somebody struggling with addiction on a show like this, which is not, I think it's doing,
see,
a good
it feels
show.
Like Arrow to me.
No, it's too dumb for Arrow would have somebody.
No, but
and I mean that in a good way. I, like, don't, yeah,
I think like an addiction storyline and somebody like tormenting themselves and all that kind of thing, it just is, to me, it's too dark for Legends. Yeah. And I just don't enjoy
it. I think if you're going to do it, I mean, yeah, different venue would be good.
Yeah. Most of their personal stuff has usually ended on, I mean, well, not all of it, but I mean, I love the ones that end on a high note where they, you know, learn something about themselves. Like the standout ones, which we've mentioned a number of times, are the summer camp episode and then the IKEA episode. Both of those are fantastic, lighthearted, but also with like a serious side that brings out the characters.
Right. And I like it in this show, at least, when sort of a conflict like this gets resolved by the end of the episode, which is not true to life. Mm-hmm. And they do continue on the next episode, having learned what they learned the previous episode, but it didn't take five arcs or five episodes scattered throughout the season to, you know, on the other hand, this is a, you know, addiction is a very serious thing. Maybe don't put that in your goofy show,
in your silly superhero show that has, you know, where you can learn passwords from cloning.
Anyway, right.
Well, let's move on then. We will now discuss James's pre-reviewed show episode of Stargirl.
What is
the title of this one?
This is Summer School Chapter 3.
It's just Summer School Chapter 3. Okay, they're just doing it that way. Yeah.
Okay. And I will admit, I had actually stopped watching Stargirl after the first episode of this season, but because I was landed
we
with
dragged
the,
you in.
The plum
Every
job.
Every time you think you're out.
So I got up to date for you guys. This was directed by Leah Thompson of Cool Cat's Crazy Dream fame and a few other things like Back to the Future. It's Christmas in the distant past of 2010, and Stripesy and Johnny Thunder have been benched while the JSA is off handling a mission. Is there any point to this whole scene? Not really. But it's a reminder that the magic ballpoint pen is super powerful, so hopefully it doesn't fall into the wrong hands.
I had forgotten about the magic ballpoint pen, to be honest. It was actually useful for it.
It was new to me. I'm like, what the hell is this thing? And then slowly I remembered that. Oh, yeah, I think they'd mentioned that before.
Right. Yeah.
So cut to the wrong hands. Pat's kid Mike is getting bullied on his paperboy run, and later accidentally picks up said pen. He says the magic words "so cool" and gets his own personal genie, Thunderbolt. Mike gets back against the bullies, is drunk with power, and wants to join the JSA. Meanwhile, new stereotypically British baddie The Shade is bothering Barbara. He's after the Black Diamond, which he mistakenly thinks is in the storage of the wizard's old belongings, who got killed last year. He steals an empty box and vanishes into the darkness. Pat and the JSA reluctantly then allow Mike to help track down the Thunderbolt and spend almost the entire episode composing just the right wish that is not going to have unintended consequences. This leads them to a location that no superhero team could have guessed, the house of the wizard, where the guy is staying.
It's so helpful.
The Shade warns them to keep out of his way, but he doesn't actually attack them. Mike, of course, wasn't allowed to come because it's too dangerous, stay in the van, etc., etc. But he wishes his way there anyway and gets Thunderbolt to attack. The Shade incapacitates them all easily with his shadows and then leaves. At the end of the episode, Mike has accidentally wished away Thunderbolt to one of the other paperboys, I think.
Who I think is from the comics is the one of the verified...
And the Shade realizes that the Black Diamond's inhabitant, Eclipso, is going to kill all the children. And possibly he might not be bad.
Yeah, he sort of intimates that maybe he's actually there to make sure that doesn't happen, because he's not crazy like Icicle.
Yeah.
So what did the two of you think of this episode?
John, why don't you start? I don't want to hear from...
I'm never really crazy about these kinds of superheroes in DC. Like, I'm not a huge fan of Green Lantern, particularly. And then this also seems to have, like, a, I don't know, impossible man, Mr. Mixelplex, whatever his name is.
Nice. Yeah.
Vibe to him. And he's voiced by Jim
Gaffigan.
Yeah. Who I think does actually a decent job.
Sure.
But
I think he does a decent job compared to the PlayStation 2 graphics that they use to represent Thunderbolt.
There's also that. I'm not a huge fan of the silly DC power set.
Well, it's imagination driven, right? Anything you can imagine.
Right.
I think that the thing that bothered me was one of the wishes, his first wishes was he wanted to be taller. And instead of doing some clever thing out of that, they just stuck him on top of a bench, and it's oh wow,
which
such
yeah.
imagination.
Yeah, doesn't really even
also he's not even like, taller.
Does that just, actually make you taller? No, it makes you higher.
Yeah, that's the thing. And the genie, Jim Genigan, says now you're taller, and it's no, I'm not. I am not taller.
That's not how that works.
Standing on something. Yeah. Also, the genie effect is the same as the Green Lantern effect with a different hue put to it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And these sort of things, they wear thin on me. You have this superpower that is incredibly powerful, but you have to be so very careful with it. It's weird that a lot of these DC powers, I think particularly the classic ones, have such a, Green Lantern didn't work against Yellow or something, right? Mm-hmm. And then Our Man.
The first one was Wood.
Can only be strong for an hour.
Yeah. 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 The first Green Lantern was he couldn't attack wood for some reason. So then they changed it to Yellow because that makes that much more sense. And now there's a whole mythology around Green Lantern and Yellow and a bunch of colors and what that means. And Yellow is driven by fear and Green is driven by, what is it? Mm-hmm. Somebody help me out here.
Yeah. I don't know.
Bravery? Courage? Something like that. Who knows? There's red. Red is driven by anger. Whatever. There's a whole spectrum with the rings that are just kind of same.
Right.
Same turd, different box.
And we've already been teased that Mike is going to be recruited, or at least tried to be recruited into the evil group.
ISA.
The ISA, yeah. So you kind of know that that's coming. And so this just feels like more table setting for that. It's I already know that's going to happen because they teased it earlier and we get this whole episode where, and again, not that much happens when it comes down to it. The thing I did like the Shade. I mean, I liked him in the previous episodes too. But I think there's a guy with a cool power.
Yeah.
I think it's also limited in that it only seems to work when it's dark, but still, he was kind of badass the way he handled it.
I just think the speaking as a British person, having this guy sitting there in his top hat, sipping his tea, it's a bit much in terms of the stereotypical
that part characteristics. Is a little ridiculous. Yeah, I actually looked him up because I wanted to figure out if he was actually British.
I was curious about that.
Actually,
it seemed
his accent could have gone either way. is it a person who's British or is it some American?
Yeah, he's putting on an affectation either way. That guy does not walk through life doing that.
The affectation is so over the top. It's more of his power set that I thought was cool and well handled.
Yeah, I think he's he was Shade the Changing Man. I've seen the Shade in, I don't know, maybe Justice League Unlimited cartoon or something. Guy with a cane that controls shadows is spooky by nature, and I like the way he holds himself and comports himself and does the Vader thing. It's hey, just sit down for dinner and we can have a talk about this. But doesn't do the Vader thing in that he lets them go without torturing them. He just takes off.
Right.
He does seem to have a difficulty overcoming Stargirl's power staff, whatever that's called.
Yeah.
So that's marginally interesting, I guess. But
certainly will come back.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I assume because her staff is all sort of light based.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that they had it. I do honestly like the idea that they had the idea of trapping him in a tanning bed. That's funny.
Yeah.
Okay. The thing that the other thing that I don't, and I think this is a problem with this show in general. The parents don't seem that great. at parenting. Like,
they are awful.
Like, they just have one, they just have one default reaction, which is to come down hard on the kid, and they don't encourage him at all. They don't say, well, okay, let's take this slow and see where we can go with it. They're just like, no.
In fairness, if
you just like cut him off and make him feel bad about like having accidentally received this pen.
So that's true. What would you do?
I think I would say, okay, well, you can't rush right out there. We got to work on this, but yeah, we'll help you.
Sorry. I mean, like, you know what? I'm supposing that you exist in our world and not their world. So yeah,
I exist in this.
Like,
world.
If you were a sensible person world, and your child came home with a device that could rewrite reality, I think you'd be like,
I guess you could force them to wish it away. I suppose that doesn't seem.
I get what. Yeah, I don't know. I get.
Yeah, but I think. But I'm thinking in universe. I don't want to think about like. I'm not thinking about real world because this is clearly not real world.
I mean, they already went through the whole arc of not letting Courtney be Stargirl.
Yeah.
So they can't kind of repeat that. But yeah, it seems like saying, no, you stay home with the, you know, omnipotent, powerful genie just seems like that's going to backfire and they should have figured that out.
Right, right. I mean, at least give him something to hang on to. Like, you know, we're going to take it slowly and we'll try and get you into this as opposed to just shutting him down and even particularly when like they I guess he figures that out later that he's that the pen went to him because he was lonely, isolated.
I do think if you gave like whatever he is a 13-14 year old infinite wishes, I think
there's gonna be a lot that's gonna be a lot more boobs, I'm pretty sure.
Or whatever.
But that's not what this show is.
No, of course not. No,
but,
nor should it be. But it's like, yeah. Giving a teenager,
it just
giving
like
any teenager infinite wishes is not going to end the way you think it's going to work.
Yeah.
I don't know about this show. It's like I watched the first season and I've now watched three of this one. And I can't put my finger on why I don't like it.
There's something that bothers me about it, too. I feel like the episodes are fairly well constructed and they're filmed well.
And I think they're acted well.
Usually better than the one particular thing in this episode. But
I like all the main cast. But it's just, I think it's possibly the sort of, I think it might be just the whole conceit of having like these young teenage superheroes.
Yeah.
And something about it just kind of like, I don't know. I guess the show is not made for, you know, men in their 40s, whatever.
Ouch. Yeah. Jeez.
Yeah. Honestly, like this show made me feel a little creepy for watching it. Like, there's nothing salacious in it, but I'm like, what am I doing watching these kids do dumb kid stuff? Like, this kid's getting bullied and he's dropping stop signs on people. It's like, what am I doing here? I know what I'm doing here. It's Wednesday night. I got nothing better to do. But, like, besides that, there's no real compelling reason for me to like it. It is well constructed, though, I think. I want to spend time for an actual good thing. So, James, why don't you kick us off and set the tone again with a rating?
Okay, so this is a firmly an Alex in my book. I do not think I will watch another episode of it because it's not giving me the sort of escapist fun that I need from a superhero show, and it's not really. There's too many superhero shows right now. I just realized Supergirl was back and watched that tonight, and it's like, I don't want to say that I'm burning out on it because obviously I'm like the one that we're going to come to.
You have a plethora of things to choose from. It's not necessarily burnout, right? It's where you're going to spend your time because you can't spend every moment of every waking hour watching superhero shows.
Right.
I know that's the mission of this podcast, but
it's not like I watch.
it's slowly becoming that because for some reason we're now covering three. We're recapping three shows in an episode.
Yeah, I. Well, while he's not here, let's just talk about him behind his back. I did not.
I think, Dan shoehorned this show
in. Dan went out of his way to put this show in the lineup. And yep. That's a lot of TV to, like, I'm so...
Because we didn't cover it, like, we didn't cover episode by episode
last week. Didn't, and I'm so thankful that I basically get to phone in Legends reviews each week. Like, we've become static now, so I don't really need to...
And that's part of the reason why I didn't want to rotate.
Yeah, I like it. I mean,
and then, like, I said, though, I don't like, know all these characters either. I couldn't name all the characters.
I have no idea.
I'd have to sit down and, like, study.
I don't know what's happening.
Figure out the names of, like, the Hour Man guy. I don't...
Yeah.
Can't even think of
it. Is this a Wilson? Right. I know that.
I know there's a Wilson.
I get the name screwed up all the time, but there's definitely one in there.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm not sure which one it is anymore.
But I don't know. Like, does the show feel like it's made for a younger audience? I'm not sure it necessarily does.
I think the first season worked well. So. It was for a younger audience. Like age appropriate audience. So, I don't know. Let's say 15 to who knows, whatever. 13 to 18, maybe. Who cares? Kids change so much during that time that I don't feel like picking a group, you know, but roughly around there. And I think the first season worked reasonably well. I think we both enjoyed it, John. I'm pretty sure Dan did because he wanted to come back.
Yeah, I liked it. It was good.
Right. And here's the thing. Yeah. These episodes have been competently made, but they have been competently making something that I don't necessarily enjoy.
Yeah.
I like them. Yeah. They're fine. I'm not thrilled about them.
Yeah. I think it's the age. I think it's mostly the age
thing. I think so, yeah.
It just seems like... Because that's the thing about the parents, right? I think the parents are deliberately sort of hard-assed. Because if you're a kid watching this show or a younger person watching the show, that's what you want to see, right? You want to see parents being unfair to you or unfair to your heroes because that's what you feel that you get at home.
Yeah, and as somebody on, I guess, this age of nearing death... I think we can,
for those of us in our slow decline,
I think that we can watch something and have parents do reasonable things that the children think are unreasonable, and that's sort of more interesting. I feel right, like, okay, parents making a good choice, kid understandably from their point of view doesn't really get what that choice is about or why it is. Somebody coming up with a genie that can like one of those stop signs just murdered a car. I got a little scared when one of those kids to stop, and I'm like, ooh, I know exactly how they can get stopped. They can get killed real quick. The show didn't go that way, but it went insane.
Right.
Like, how do you explain a bunch of stop signs all over the place? Like, they live in this liminal world sort of thing between, like, superheroes exist and everybody else just goes on with life as if they don't in some way.
And there's a fair amount of two-dimensional characterization.
Yeah.
Because the kids who are bullies are just, like, cookie-cutter bully. I mean, they steal cookies from girls.
I feel really bad about that because I was a bully growing up, and I would like to see myself characterized. I want people to know I want people to understand my motivation of why I stole those cookies from a 5-year-old girl.
Cookies from the Girl Scouts. Yeah. It was to give them to a
Robin Hood thing. It was definitely a Robin Hood thing. Yeah. Anyway, okay, I think we've basically done the ratings. You know what? John Jr. to Alex is where I'll leave it. John.
I'm going to give it a John Jr., I guess. Although it seems definitely worse than that Legends episode.
Thing is, it's well made.
Maybe. Sometimes I like Mike. He's not my favorite character in this show. And so it's an episode that's all about him. And like I said, I just don't like that pen. I don't like the power set.
They seem to have got rid of that.
So devoting a lot of the episode to that particular thing was not working for me.
Right. It feels like in TNG when they give an episode to your least favorite character, like who's boring. Alexander, Worf's son.
Oh, yeah.
It's
yeah.
like okay. yeah. You know, I don't not mad at the actor or anything. I get why I you want to tell that story, but I mean, do we really care about Alexander? No, not that much.
Yeah.
So this is basically Q hangs around with Alexander.
Yeah.
No, Q's son hangs around with Alexander.
Okay, let's move on because I don't want
James, we already got your rating. So
far, move on. Do you know what the ratings are running this week? James is so
substantially lower.
I love that we try to be a very positive show, and like, man, I don't think we've said one nice thing about anything yet.
this is my superpower. I just drag you.
We've said many nice things, mostly about legends, but a few things. About
three John Juniors, five John Juniors, and one Alex so far.
Yeah.
Okay. So save the day, John.
Let's see what happens with what if. I am going to do the recap, and we start off with Fury and Romanoff, who are headed to talk to Tony, who's in the donut, and you know, from Iron Man 2. And when Romanoff injects him with the what's supposed to be the lithium dioxide to help him, because he's been poisoned by palladium, he dies instead. That's awkward. Romanoff gets taken away by the strike team to be questioned, but Fury slips her the syringe so she can conduct her own investigation. She takes out the strike team, of course, because she can do that in the truck, and then escapes. Fury goes to the site where they have Thor's hammer in Thor 1. And then when Barton has a bead on Thor, who is about to try to pick up the hammer, he accidentally fires, which makes no sense because he would never accidentally fire, killing Thor. And then Clint gets locked up and he does not escape. He just dies mysteriously. Romanoff goes to visit Betty Ross, right?
Betty Ross.
Earlier I had written Betsy, but it's Betty Ross, yeah. And asks her to investigate the syringe. She only finds evidence of a projectile being fired from the needle. Fury calls Romanoff and tells her that Barton is dead. And Banner turns up in the closet, and they realize that both Banner and Romanoff are targets. Meanwhile, in Arizona, Loki and the forces of Asgard show up seeking revenge against the Earth because of Thor's death. Loki uses the frost giant cube to start freezing things. Meanwhile, back at the university where Betty Ross works, General Ross and the army show up. Banner gets shot with something and then hulks out, starts punching tanks. Then he starts getting bigger and bigger, and he explodes and dies. Fury negotiates with Loki and gets until sunrise to catch the person who killed Thor. Romanoff hides out in a public library and gets Coulson's password to investigate who accessed the Avengers files. She finds it was the ID of a woman who died 2 years ago, and then she calls Fury. She gets attacked and only manages to tell him it was all about hope before she's killed. Fury almost calls Captain Marvel, but then he realizes what's up. Then, at a graveyard in San Francisco, Fury shows up at the grave of Hope Van Dyne, agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. Hank Pym shows up as the Yellow Jacket, furious that S.H.I.E.L.D. Recruited his daughter and got her killed. He attacks, but he can't seem to land a punch on Fury, because it's not actually Fury, it's Loki. Pym gets taken away, and Loki decides he's going to stay. He kind of likes Earth. He shows up at the UN and has taken over the planet. Meanwhile, Fury and Coulson stand over the coffins of the dead Avengers, and Fury then goes to find some more heroes. He locates the Capsicle and says, "Welcome back, Captain." But it's Captain Marvel he's talking to, who says, "Where's the fight?" That is the end of this episode of What If. So previous two episodes were mostly just switcheroos of character for character, and this one is a little bit more of a murder mystery. Did that work for you guys or not?
James?
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed the kind of like, I think this is based on a comic called Fury's Big Week, and it implies that everything takes place like in the original MCU timeline. When he recruits all these people, he's basically doing it one a day. So all the initial films are all take place in.
And
the
I
same
love
week.
The large, the Russo brothers style day markers that they use.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Russo brothers use them for locations. They use them for days in this.
And I think the implication is also that Hope Van Dyne is shot and killed by the Winter Soldier. Cause it says that she goes to Odessa.
Yes. Right.
Instead of Natasha. Mm-hmm. And yeah. So I liked all the play on that, and the things like even just the when Nat is in the van and it's clearly a nod to Steve in the elevator. Because everybody looking around and things like that.
So, I mean, it's basically the same group of people too, although Rumlow is in the front.
I think that, what really sells this episode to me is the fact that they got most of the people back. Mm-hmm. And Clark Gregg just talking about how Thor smells and on all these things is just, I could take 30 minutes
I
of
found that.
That
yeah. Weird. Because even rotting I don't smells think... like lavender, like that's...
I think that's great.
I mean, he's a god.
I mean, yeah, I believe right. it, but it's weird that you keep pointing it out, dude. Like, that's...
I mean, I don't think that's out of character of him trying Captain America to sign his cards and mm-hmm. all sorts of things. Mm-hmm. And I also love the password, the hashtag Steve, I heart Steve 0704.
Perfect. Which is Steve's,
4th of July.
Is July's, 4th of July.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I really liked all the stuff.
There was some good humor in this. I think one of the things that I thought was odd was they gave a lot of the humor to Romanoff, which is not really her character, like her character in the movie.
She's
she being one of the people that they didn't actually get original back.
Lake,
so it was
Lake Bell,
who plays Poison Ivy in the Harley Quinn animated series.
Yeah, and was Vanessa Fisk in Into the Spider-Verse.
Oh, cool.
I don't know if we give a Piper Award out for for voice work, but
yeah, why not? It's also, also within Marvel. So Piper's typically when you cross the streams, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think she does a good enough job. I think with the combination of the writing being more quippy, it's a little bit weird because she doesn't seem exactly like Romanoff in the movies.
No.
So I found that a little bit odd. And it comes like a lot of this. It's like I love having the original actors, but when they pair them with people who aren't the original actors, and those people have a bigger part in the episode, it comes off a little strange to me for some reason.
I watched this as if I was reading sort of a what if comic. Like it didn't need to be the same person for me. It was a different character. Yeah. Like I don't want to. Guess where it came apart for you, but this episode worked, but where the characterization came apart is right at the beginning. Fury's giving his speech, which it turns out in this episode he's been giving a lot or has written in a lot, and then we cut to Nat with her head against the window looking all bored and cracking a joke. That is unlike the character that we've seen. I think that work would have been done by Scarlett Johansson just sort of rolling her eyes and looking out the window, like disinterested as he babbled on. Do you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I think it would have been, like she's more likely to let
maybe
you run down someplace dumb. And
because she didn't go to Odessa and get shot and all these other things, she's gone a different path. Mm. So maybe she's like slightly lighter hearted.
Maybe
you get your Marvel No prize.
I like the Hulk.
There's a lot of like good references. I was happy to see them return to the Incredible Hulk because it's a movie that doesn't really get much play.
Doesn't get much love. Yeah, and that's a pretty fun scene.
It gets mentioned every once in a while. I mean, there's, you know, the where he falls to the Rainbow Bridge in
Ragnarok
is a callback to him jumping out of the helicopter in that movie as well. So every once in a while they do bring up something, but it in general, it's the movie that's sort of shoved to the curb.
Yeah.
It was kind of weird to have Mark Ruffalo retconned into that.
Yeah.
Well,
but it was good to have his voice, I think. Yeah. I mean, they weren't going to get Ed Norton.
No.
That would have been weirder.
Like exploding the Hulk's heart to be like really disturbing.
Yes, it's very
disturbing. Here's the thing. How did he get out of the Hulk? He gets shot in there, expands his heart.
Well, when he explodes, I guess.
I guess.
He explodes, you just...
Yeah.
There's holes.
I guess so. Well, yeah, so, there's a lot of holes. Yeah. That looked really...
He looked like he was just goo all over.
You know what was so disturbing about that is, like, the Hulk being, not the brightest of people. He just looks confused and like terrified about mm-hmm. what's happening, and that really gave me like it's not like I'm gonna go fight a giant fire demon at the end of Ragnarok and I'm gonna get killed. Like that's not a thing. It's more like the Hulk has no idea what's happening to his body and it gets real bad, and like that's disturbing. Yeah. I did chuckle, I guess, when... He explodes into a puff of smoke rather than, like, just gore everywhere. So, I guess that was a better outcome.
I think the other thing was, I kind of thought Natasha was going to make it to the end, given that they have just killed her off in the MCU as well. So it's like, how many times is she going to get killed?
Right. I kind of like that. They, I kind of like that because she was our character, right? We were rolling with her.
Yeah, they killed
her. And then they killed her.
Yeah, which they haven't done like in either of the previous two. Taking out the main character,
Really. I don't like that they keep killing Natasha. I didn't particularly like it in Endgame when
that's the awkward part that it just happens.
I mean, the only two people that got thrown off that cliff happened to be women that were, you know, it's not a great look. I understand from the story why they were doing that and that it was Natasha asking to make that sacrifice for Clint, but like, I kind of wish they thought things through a little bit more on that. Yeah.
Yeah. I like the fact that the Hulk had hair, like
chest hair,
the Hulk in that movie, you know, like, he looked like a, not exactly like from that movie, cause he was much more like sort of ripped in that movie. Or veiny muscular type, but he did look a little bit more like the Hulk in that movie than he did in Avengers.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
And the other line that made me laugh from Coulson was when he was talking about Barton's not wrong about his hair.
Yeah,
and then he says it's an accurate description. He's gorgeous.
Did we actually say who the murderer was?
We did. Well, yeah, because you mentioned Hank Pym. Hank Pym shows up at Hulk.
I mean, it's Hank Pym.
Yeah, I mean, I liked him, you know, in the yellow jacket outfit, clearly unhinged, and the fact that it was actual Michael Douglas.
Yeah, it is funny to get Michael Douglas to come and voice your cartoon. I kind of enjoy that.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, the only people that they haven't got are, for the most part, are people that they just don't have contracts with anymore.
Yeah, which makes sense. Right?
Yeah,
except for Captain Marvel, and then, I mean, Hemsworth didn't have any lines in this, but I think he's going to be in an upcoming episode.
I was wondering, like, how much work it is for somebody to do this, especially if you're coming in and getting a couple of lines and then dying, like in this. I mean, because like Samuel L. Jackson and Clark Gregg and people, they got like decent.
I think Okoye came back for like one line last episode, right?
Yeah, I don't know how that works. I mean, honestly, they must have recording studio. Like, it's not that hard to get a good recording studio. And they can fly a director out to you.
Yeah. It seems like Michael Douglas probably just did it from his house.
Yeah, yeah. Well, especially after people have pretty good recording equipment in their house, you know. So,
right.
This is a complete tangent, but did you see the making of the Mandalorian last season finale episode? Because there is a very interesting thing about voice acting at the end, which I will not spoil.
Okay.
But when you get to that, you'll realize why I bring it up now.
Okay.
Yeah. Interesting. So, James, do you have anything else, John?
Well, there are a couple other lines. Fury sort of gets in a reference to Seven. The movie Seven,
Says
What's in the Box,
which I
enjoy.
Yeah.
And then Hank Pym saying, "What's with the goth kid?" and Loki says, "Hello, trickster god."
I kind of like that. I mean, obviously Tom Hiddleston's been having a lot of fun recently, and I like that he came back and it worked. It suited it. I kind of like that he ends up in charge of, well, ruling the Earth after. It's like, oh, this just fell in my lap. I guess I'll...
Well, yeah, and it makes sense. I mean, like, that's what he wanted to do in the first place.
Yeah, but did he...
He just rolled right into it.
Yeah, I guess he did want to do that at that point in the timeline, right? Like, Thor had been banished, which happens only after Loki has done his evil deeds of attacking the Frost Giants and doing a bunch of other stuff that sets him up to be not just a jerk to his friends, but like an actual villain in the first Thor movie, right? So he's sitting pretty in the timeline in order to be like, well, you know what, I'm going to take this over and maybe dad will love me now, I guess, is what he's thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Especially because they killed Thor. That's a good excuse for him to be like, well, look, these jackasses killed.
Yeah. We had Lady Sif at his side as well.
Yeah. Right. So she seems like she's on board. I mean, like, which would make kind of sense, you know. I mean, Thor gets killed, they would probably want revenge.
Yeah, did you see that, Omri? That, so it's funny, when the Bifrost thing came out, and it was like, it went on for quite a while, I'm like, that's weird.
Yeah, that seemed excessive. Yeah,
and then I see what they beamed down, and I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. They've got like, the Destroyer thing in the background, and, like, the Warriors 3, plus Lady Sif, and Loki, and, like, an army of these guys, and I'm like, oh, that's not good. It's very bad.
Yeah. And I like it that Fury comes up to the Destroyer and says, "You got a name, soldier?"
I love that too. I like when do like when he's talking to Loki and his phone keeps ringing, but he won't answer it.
That was the other one. Yeah.
I kind of like
that written down.
Because I think as you're writing,
are you going to take that?
Well, I think as you're writing that scene, the FU that people are maybe expecting is Fury just takes out his phone and takes a phone call in the middle of this, but he doesn't. Mm-hmm. He just keeps staring at him. Like, I'm not going to answer this, and you're going to have to deal with this.
He does eventually. He takes the call and he holds his finger.
It's only after he's broken Loki's pattern of speech, right? Like, Loki's just trying to do this whole thing, and he leaves it to Loki to be like, just answer the phone, man, because I'm trying to get through my bit here.
I think if Nick Fury hadn't done that, maybe Loki wouldn't have taken over the Earth. But that was just that one moment that pissed him off.
Yep. Yep.
I thought it was good. I didn't think this episode was quite at the level of the previous two, but I still really enjoyed it.
I am interested by that because a number of people have said that to me as well.
Wow.
I thought it was easily as good, maybe even a little better. I really enjoyed this.
It feels like we're getting into ratings now. So, James.
Yeah, we are definitely getting into ratings.
James, go for it.
I mean,
I'm
a Biff all the way because I thought I liked it that it wasn't another, you know, we're just going to switch these two characters up. Not that there's anything particularly wrong with that because that can be interesting, but they did two in a row. And so it's time to do something different. And I thought that there were just like lots of nice little nods to previous movies and good humor in it as well. So I quite enjoyed this episode.
You know what? Let's finish with you, Downer McGee. I really enjoyed this episode. I thought it was, I don't know if it was superior to the others, but I liked that it flexed a little bit more and that, like, it went outside the box. I did not expect Tony Stark to get killed right off the bat. Not at all.
I think
something,
even though they said something about losing, you know, like, they open with that.
Right. Yeah.
I was surprised.
But I didn't. I certainly didn't expect it to be from Natasha giving him a shot. I enjoyed that. I liked the way it swerved. I think due to the compressed time, we see characters act a little out of character, like Natasha being a little bit more quippy, you know, people doing things that they may not necessarily have done in the immediacy of the moment. Like, I don't know, like the Bruce Banner just happened to be their thing. Like there's stuff that is forced because it's gotta be forced to bring all of these things together.
Yeah.
But overall, I loved it. I loved visiting all of these characters. I loved going back to their first appearances or, you know, in Iron Man, it was Iron Man 2. I thought it did a really good job. I did not see it coming. I didn't know it's a whodunit and I didn't know whodunit. And that's kind of cool. Yeah. I like that Loki and Fury would team up. That seems sort of appropriate for Fury's character.
Yeah, you know that Fury would do whatever.
He's going to do whatever it takes. He's going to figure it out, you know? And I like the end that he's like, okay, well, this went poorly.
And then he'll deal with the consequences afterwards.
Which is what we immediately see him doing. We don't get left with Loki takes over. We get left with Captain Marvel's there, and he's getting Captain America out. Right. And you know he's going to... I don't know who's left. Who's left? Goliath is left. Who else? I don't know. I'm trying to...
I'm sure there's somebody.
Falcon? Whatever. They'll figure it out. It'll be fine. Yeah. And so...
Black Panther.
Black Panther. Perfect. Man. Cap? Black Panther and Captain Marvel.
Yeah, that's an Avengers team.
Yeah, right, that's there. A core of an Avengers team that means business. Oh, you still got War Machine. Rhodey just took off with the suit, and that's why Tony is nursing his hangover. Yeah. So yeah, I liked it a lot. It's a very strong biff. It's difficult to compare them to other ones. I don't know. It's like non-linear storytelling. Yeah. It's not like they connect. They're different things. But yeah, I enjoyed this one a lot. And I guess that's where I'll leave that. Finally, we get a couple of biffs. Okay, James, screw it up for us. go be an Ollie Queen. Well, skin us alive, James.
Despite what reputation I might have gained on this podcast, I am also giving it a strong biff. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, God.
And I think, even if I thought this episode wasn't quite as strong as the previous two, this stuff is still miles ahead of a lot of things. I want more Agent Coulson and Fury and all these things. Yeah. And so the sort of little side stories and just hearing them play off each other, even if they're playing off each other from the comfort of their own houses in terms of acting.
Right.
I think it works pretty well. I like the Coulson lines in this, but also Fury. I did wonder with the Loki thing, the switch at the end. It was at what point did Fury and Loki have a conversation where Fury was like, "So can you outline your basic powers so that I can figure out we can set?"
Well, how did they know to go to Hope's grave? And how did Hank know to show up there?
I think he worked it out from the, it's all about Hope.
I mean, he knew it was about Hope.
Sure, but how did Hank...
He knew that it was Hank Pym, but the question as to why he would show up at the grave.
So you just go to the grave, that's going to clearly annoy... Why?
The other thing is he was following Fury around because he wanted to kill Fury.
Oh.
Yeah. But why he would confront him rather than just make his head explode.
I feel like if I was hunting somebody down, even... Michael Douglas looking as bedraggled and awesome as he did in this.
And his falling down.
Man, Falling Down is a great movie. Really, really great movie. Don't do that in real life, anybody, but it's good. I think once I figured out that Fury was going to the grave of my daughter, I'd be like, oh, this cat's on to me. There's no way he just happens to be visiting Hope's grave this morning. So I think I might have been a little bit more cautious, but I don't know. He seems out of his depth, right? Well, he's very capable. He kills the Hulk. Pretty impressive. But he's clearly losing losing the plot a little bit, right? So, yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. But overall, it was a great episode. I enjoy these things because they feel like the movies, even if they're animated. Mm-hmm. I kind of start to forget the fact that they're animated.
And technically they're supposed to be canon, right? I mean, canon in another universe.
Yeah, I mean, I still wonder if we're going to see any kind of interconnecting bits or...
I would love to see Jeffrey Wright come to the, the live-action MCU as the Watcher. Yeah.
I want to see, Captain Carter, turn up. Yeah. I mean that would be great.
That seems less likely, but it seems like Jeffrey Wright could easily find a way. They're gonna do the Multiverse of Madness,
there was some line I remember hearing this week that there's a scene in the trailer for What If that's almost an exact copy of a scene from the Spider-Man trailer with Doctor Strange falling into things. Yeah. So, who knows?
Yeah, if they do a scene, sort of a montage scene of jumping to different universes, why not get Hayley Atwell?
Yeah.
She's done it plenty of times before.
Why not get Hayley Atwell?
I think
tattooed on my back, by the way. That's
I was going to say,
I'm going to ride and die for that for life.
That's guy's tramp stamp.
Almost any TV show or movie that's being planned, why not get Hayley out?
Yeah, she's awesome.
Indeed. Yeah. All right. Well, let's end there on a high note, shall we?
Before James says anything else.
Before James decides to rate something else. Yeah.
So let's talk about The Boys season 2.
Nope, we don't have time for that today. We want to thank our fantastic readers for reading along, printing out all these transcripts, and reading through our babble. And we'll be back next week. Dan should be back by then. And we'll be covering 3 more episodes of these crazy shows. And until then, I'd like to thank our special guest, James Thompson, for appearing. Thank you for stepping in and destroying I will these shows for us.
I will hopefully return in some other show.
Yeah, we'll have you back again.
We'll make it happen. Just
don't make me recap Stargirl again.
No.
All right.
No.
We'll put that in the notes.
That one's going in so John, Dan, and I each have mailboxes where we receive reader letters. Dan is just a festering pile of garbage that, like, this is all of the hate mail just files into Dan's bucket, and that's why he wasn't invited here. Just jokes aside, thanks for filling in. It's been really fun. I really enjoy it. I actually enjoy that you flexed the rating system a little bit more than we ever do, because we never use it.
Right,
we never ever use it, and you did.
I know. We end up, we biff too much. Probably.
And you are a real biff. So thank you very much. Do you want to plug anything, James? Like, to our, I mean, these are people who read podcasts. So
that's true. Yeah.
I mean, I guess, like, rather than plugging my own stuff, go listen to the Footballer's Life Ted Lasso podcast.
I just listened to your last episode. Yeah. It was very good. Thank you. It was really enjoyable.
Thank you. Yeah. It was my first solo hosting thing.
Good job.
Nice. Excellent. All right. And that is another fine podcast that you can find on the Incomparable Network, which you can support if you'd like to. Check that out as well. I don't know what the URL is. I'm sure you can find it.
I don't know. This is what we should not have fired.
You're responsible adults. Yeah, you can find
us. We know the URL. It's varanisports.co.
That's it. That is exactly the URL. Yeah. I do feel like, John, I feel like we fired Diggle, and we kind of need him back because he's the only thing that's holding this crap show together.
We'll see if this podcast gets edited in public.
Ouch!
No, so what does that make me?
Man, I'm telling you, man, we made it to 100 and we were all in love with each other, and we are stumbling now.
Yeah, I know. It's weird. Long, strange trip. All right, we will see you all next week. Thanks for listening.
You have failed this city.
Norm! Hey, how's life treating you there, Norm?
Beats me. And it kicks me and leaves me for dead.
My past is coming back to haunt me.
Seems to be a recurring theme with you, kid.
Evening, everybody.
Could you give us the room, please?